This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast.
A woman may read a Game of Thrones.
A woman may start a podcast.
Two women may host Podcasters Landing, the show devoted to the entire A Song of Ice and Fire series.
Two women may cover three chapters each week, followed by history and friendship lessons.
A listener may sit and tune in.
A woman may use adult language.
A woman may reveal spoilers.
A listener may support the show on our Patreon page at patreon.com/Sophia Mayer Studios, all under case.
A woman welcomes a listener to Podcaster's Landing.
Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Nat.
And today we are covering A Game of Thrones, Sansa, Jon, and Bran. In these chapters, Sansa's delusion was a little too much for me to stomach.
Oh, yeah. It's very difficult. And there's a part of it that I was like, wait a minute. I mean, we all know that she has done shit, but it's still this little bitch. I swear to God.
Yep. And then we've got Jon fighting off a walker.
Yeah, his first one.
His very first one. And then Bran agrees with Hodor. Hodor.
We all know.
Yeah,
we all understand.
Hodor. That's how I feel about life right now.
Yeah.
But first, we go to Sansa.
Yeah.
And so, Sansa has been barricaded, locked in her room. Like, it's lots of very classic Princess Rapunzel shit. She was put in the highest tower of Maegor's Holdfast or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, she, in this section here, like, she seems a bit of, like, a psychopath and a bit deluded. With everything, she's just like very bothered that Jane's crying because Jane wants to see her father, doesn't know if her father is okay. And she's like, oh, she was such a child.
Like, she's crying because Jane understands the situation a hell of a lot more than Sansa.
Yeah,
does.
Of course. She was dragged from, like, the Hound broke down her door to grab her and she's bruised.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets, like, thrown into Sansa's, you know, room and locked in there. So she has seen, like, all the blood and all the bodies and...
like, they're killing everybody.
Yeah, and, like, Sansa is just scared because she, you know, because of the fighting, she doesn't know what's going on. But we all know, in a bit, in the chapter, that she kind of caused this, you know, not totally her fault, of course, but...
No. Yep, so she... So they finally come for her on the third day, and they hear the bells ringing, and Sansa realizes that King Robert must be dead.
She says she doesn't know how she knew, but she did sort of know it, and she, you know, because of all the fighting and stuff, she thought that someone stormed the castle and murdered Robert, and it's like, maybe that's why everyone was fighting.
Yep.
Not going through her head that, you know, something might have happened.
Yep. And so finally, Ser Boris comes to escort her to the queen.
It's funny that she's not that scared for her father, and she's not scared about Arya at all because she doesn't even mention her throughout this whole chapter until, like, the end.
Yeah, it's... In terms of, you know, just to summarize, you know, Queen Cersei and the council members tell her that that her father conspired with Stannis' brother to seize the throne from Joffrey, and that if they want her engagement to continue with Joffrey, she needs to write to her brother and her mother to tell, have them come to King's Landing to swear fealty, and so that the King's peace is withheld and minimum damage is done in light of Eddard's arrest.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, on the lead up to that, you know, Sansa's telling her, you know, we're scared. No one's telling us anything. She's like, us? Who is there with you? She tells her that's Jane. And, you know, Cersei's not happy.
No, because she knows probably Jane understands the situation better than Sansa. And yeah. Doesn't like that, you know, that the bubble is starting to burst.
Yeah, she sort of, she says, tell Littlefinger to take her somewhere. And it's just all horrible to think that he might put her in a brothel. Which
yeah, that's
he did,
basically
didn't he?
What I always presumed until, you know, we see her again much later in, like, Feast of Crows and stuff.
Yeah, but what she's doing is, you know, she's separating Sansa from everything that she knows. Mm-hmm. To sort of manipulate her.
Yeah. And this whole situation just makes me think, I have in my notes, of how deceptive really is Cersei, because, again, throwing shade at Sansa, it is not difficult to deceive a 13-year-old girl with a head, yeah. with her head full of, you know, fairy tales and fantasy.
Isn't she 11?
What?
I get so confused. Isn't she 11?
Or maybe she's 12, right?
She's 11, Arya's 9, Bran is 8.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay, so...
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Basically, it is not in any way difficult for Cersei to manipulate a little girl like this.
No, not at all. Especially a girl that has grown up with fairy tales and, you know, to her, like, Cersei's beautiful and she's a queen. And, yeah. you know,
she's like, literally Queen Guinevere of the Arthenian legends, you know.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. Just like, you know, someone, I think in her head that someone who is pretty can never be horrible.
Yeah, you know? that's the thing. And, you know, it does pose an interesting point that if Sansa was not so taken in just by appearances, if she had gone directly to Robert and not Cersei.
Yeah, so that's where we, come, you know, Cersei is basically saying, you know, well, breaks the news to her. Yeah. And Varys was the one who actually delivers the news. And why do you think he did that? Because he obviously doesn't believe that Ned is a traitor. So why do you think he was the one who's like, yeah, your father is a traitor? He conspire to take the
I think in terms of the deal that Varys is going to try to offer Ned later, I think he's trying to butter Sansa up to this line of thinking of accepting that even though it may not be true, you need to like act as though it's true, and so that your father can at least live and go to the wall and shit mm-hmm. like that. So I Varys is very much in the camp of, regardless of what the truth is, the realm will bleed if anyone tries to challenge Joffrey as king. And
yeah.
So, mm-hmm. And so he's trying. Excuse me. So he's trying to preserve like that element, and also to frighten her, so that if there's a situation where Sansa can either see her father or write a letter to her father, that Ned will be influenced because of Sansa's, like, you know, pleading and begging.
Yeah, that is true.
That's my interpretation of why, you know, Varys is going along with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and we all know that he serves the realm, so he will do whatever is, you know, wherever the pendulum swings the farthest to, I guess. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so Sansa's like, no, he wouldn't do that, and... you know, Cersei shows her the letter that, who was it? Was it Fat Tom was going to, well, was it Fat Tom? I don't know. Who was going to, send, well, give to,
letter to Stannis?
To Stannis, yeah. And, it's like, you know, she's like, oh yeah, no, he would never do that. The king was his friend.
Robert thought so, said the queen. This betrayal mm-hmm. would have broken his heart. The gods are kind and he did not live to see it.
Yeah, And then she, you know, she's kind of like, you are sweet and it's, and, you know, it's not your fault and what a dreadful position this has left us in. But you are the daughter of a traitor. How can I allow you to marry my son? And, you know, so it's like, but I love him. Well. I would never do anything like that. And then, you know, and Cersei says, how well do I know that? Why else would you have come to me and told me of your father's plan to send you away from us if not for love? So here we find out that Sansa actually kind of gave Cersei an advantage on that day that Robert had died. Mm-hmm. You know, because if it wasn't for Sansa running to the queen on that morning, Ned would have had time to be sworn in as a protector of the realm by the council. Mm-hmm. And then he would have had the power to take Joffrey out of the throne, mm-hmm. do whatever he needed to do, you know?
Yeah.
Although, yeah, with Littlefinger there, I don't know. But yeah,
who knows the long that would last. And it certainly sealed the fate of certainly Arya and Sansa were not going to get out of there.
Yeah, but so yeah, it made Cersei act fast, you know? I guess she already had an inkling that some shit was going to go down. But with Sansa telling her, you know, oh, he's going to put her to send us north, she was just like, he's trying to protect them of something and something bad's going to go down. So she acted, that made her act fast.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's in the sense of, in terms of, I guess it's a question of what do we expect of women in a way, because like Sansa on the one hand, at least at this point, is the least equipped to be a queen in the South because she is, you know, so deluded and doesn't know mm-hmm. how to play the game because she's too much like her dad. So if anything, you know, it should have been like, you know, okay, you want to betroth my son to a daughter, you can have Arya because Ned knows that Arya is smart enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Sansa is, yeah, I guess it is because she's older. Basically, you know, they would never betroth like a little child like Arya to someone.
She's older. She's conventionally the prettier one. And again,
More like a lady.
Yeah, like a lady. And it's just, again, Sansa, as we'll learn later, Sansa is not dumb.
No.
She's not dumb. And so, like, but yet here, it seems she cares more about losing her status as, you know, Joffrey's betrothal than, like, the actual, you know, stuff in regards to her father.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone's going, you know, oh, you know, Varys says the poor child, a love so true and innocent. It would be cruel to deny it. And yet, what can we do? Her father stands condemned. And Pycelle says, you know, a child born of a traitor seed will find that betrayal comes naturally to her. So they're all kind of like building that. I think it's horribly manipulative. Yeah,
they're gaslighting her to try and, you know, ingratiate herself. Mm-hmm. I'll do anything you say just to prove that I'm not like them. And so therefore more inclined to do whatever they want, which ultimately what they want is they know that, you know, not that Rob listens to Sansa or Catelyn listens to Sansa's letters anyway, but anything written by any of them would just be like, you know, piss on that. Like, so they were really wanting, they needed the letter to come in Sansa's handwriting.
Yeah. And I think, so it is firstly putting an impossible task on the shoulders of this child, right?
Right.
You know, they know that it's not, nothing is going to come from it. They know this. But it's also like, I feel like Cersei knows that because Catelyn picks up on it later on. I don't know if it still is in this book or if it's in the next one. Catelyn picks up on it. It's like, that doesn't sound like Sansa. Those are not her words. Mm-hmm. You know, it is her handwriting, but it's not her words. So I feel like that only caused, was the only cause for that is to make them revolt, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, and I think it just goes right down to just maturity level, where Sansa is, even though they're using the words, your father has been, you know, arrested mm-hmm. as a traitor, like, again, she still thinks this is all, like, child's play, where it's like, you know, that there are no real stakes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, for and sure. She thinks that she will only say like a few words, and the fact that she's like, oh, when I marry the prince, when I marry the king, I will be able to convince him to let my father go and, you know, be an exile or go live up on the wall or something. Yeah, she still thinks that like it's that simple. There is a bit here because they keep like, you know, saying that she is like a traitor and that she has the blood of a traitor, but at the same time she's like, oh, but you love him so much, I wonder if that's something that you could do, you know, if you did this. And then there's a bit here, you know, that Cersei tells her, it says, your lady mother will no doubt fear for you dreadfully. The queen said, you must tell her that you are well and in our care, that we are treating you gently and seeing you and seeing to your every want. Bid them to come to King's Landing, them as in Catelyn and Robb, and swear and pledge their fealty to Joffrey when he takes his throne. If they do that, why, then we shall know that there is no taint in your blood. And when you come into the flower of your womanhood, you shall wed the king in the great Seth of Baelor before the eyes of God and men. And then Sansa's like, wed the king? The words made her breath come faster, yet still Sansa hesitated. So she's kind of like going back and forth. And you know what this reminds me of?
What?
You know, in Aladdin,
oh, yeah.
When Jafar is sort of hypnotizing
the Sultan.
The Sultan, yeah. And then he's just like, what is he saying? Marry Jasmine to you? And then he's just like getting hypnotized. And he's like, but you're far too old. And then he just like presses on more. That's what made me think of it, you know, because Sansa's like,
oh, yeah,
yeah, maybe so I want old. To see my father. Yeah. And then she's like, you know, Sansa's like, perhaps if I might see my father, talk to him about it. And then, yes. You know, Cersei's like, really? Disappoint me, Sansa, you know? So it's...
Yeah, you know. It's just, you know, not that... Again, Ned should have known his own daughter well enough to realize, or even at the very least, like, on the road, you know, when they killed, mm-hmm. when he had to kill a lady, that, you know, Sansa is not mentally capable of, you know, mm-hmm. being, you know, wise and, like, with every... all the shitty people, you know, around us, like, you know, again, just, you know, being able to, you know, say no to Robert and just being like, okay, I'm Arya's staying, but like, I'm, you know, sending Sansa home.
Yeah. It goes back to the point that we made, you know, on the previous episode where it was a time where they should have sat her down,
mm-hmm.
Before they went south and be like, you need to keep a watch, because they didn't do that, so that's why she's the way she is, you know. She's just very, she endeared herself too much with the queen and,
yeah,
you know, playing fantasy.
And it's just, I'm wondering, did Catelyn, because Catelyn is not dumb in that regard, again, she blames too much on the Lannisters in regards to mm-hmm. like Tyrion and whatnot, but did Catelyn at all have a talk with her?
No, not at all.
Why not?
I don't know. It's like she knew that her child was going south amongst like these people, and she just didn't say anything. I think because she's too young, you know. And she's a woman, she's too young.
Or yeah, like, again, just the way betrothals worked back then, like, again, they cannot even technically marry. Well, I guess they could, but, you know, they traditionally, you know, would not marry until, you know, Sansa hits her period. So, mm-hmm. like, if Ned really, really wanted to, he could have put on the farce of, oh, they're still engaged. Like, when they get older, they're definitely betrothed, but still come up mm-hmm. with some, like, excuse shit, like, I'm sending Sansa home.
Yeah.
Like, while they were still on the road, and technically save face and keep the engagement going.
Yeah.
No, just to be like, oh, like, this terrible situation, they need some space, and then they'll get back, and then they'll get back together, blah, blah, blah. Like, he could have done something like that.
Yeah, he could have. But, you know, alas, could have, would have, what is it? Could have, would have, should have? Yeah. You know, and then, you know, she's like, oh, what is to become of my dad? And Grandmaster Pycelle says that's a matter for the king to decide. And then she kind of like, the king, I have been so stupid, You know, Joffrey was the king now. Her gallant prince will never hurt her father, no matter what he might have done. You know, and then she's kind of like, yes, this will definitely work. This plan will definitely work. I will marry, I will send the letter, do what they want. It'll all be fine. I will marry him, and then I will, you know, talk to him about letting my father, you know, pardoning my father. Because that's how things work, no?
Yeah, it, like, again, it's just, you know, I have trouble just because I am not like Sansa. Like, when it comes to, like, when it came to, like, bad relationships, like, in, you know, dating and stuff, like, you know, I made plenty of mistakes in, you know, my dating life. But the one thing I was good at is I never had to run away. I could always walk away, as painful as whatever reality was, that, oh, this guy's a dipshit, or he's not interested in commitment, he only sees me as a sex object. As shitty as that made me feel, and how depressed that made me feel, I could still see the reality.
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. You know, as depressed and, you know, going on medications that made me, I never got to a point like Sansa where I'm staying because I am, like, so desperate that I cannot accept the reality of the situation.
Well, the thing is, she is a child,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, she's a child, this is true.
She's a child, so she is kind of like, if the queen is saying this, then it must be true. If the mm-hmm. queen, you know? If the mm-hmm. queen is saying this, if, like, the whole council was saying this, and so I should do it, I will do it, because
mm-hmm.
they just want what's the best for me, and they are, you know, like I said, it's the, you know, the gallantry and, like, how pretty mm-hmm. the queen is and how quote-unquote Joffrey, handsome
the queen
Joffrey
in her vampire dress that's black with the whole corset and
embroidered
with teardrop rubies.
It's so dramatic. Yeah, you know, she was like, they would never want to harm me.
Yeah,
you
like,
know?
I didn't pay that much attention to Cersei's dress before, and I'm just like, damn, she, like, should be one of Dracula's brides.
Yeah, she should. She's very well placed to be one. Yep. You know, but in Sansa's eyes, she doesn't think that someone who looks like them would ever
yeah.
harm her, you know?
Yeah.
And the fact that she thinks that, like, she doesn't, I don't think she realizes that the betrothal, you know, is because, you know, one person like the other, it was because of, like, joining two powerful houses together. It's not, it she thinks it's all about, like, love and fairy tales, you know?
That's true. I think what fuels that in her is because Robert and Ned were such good friends. Mm-hmm. Were such good friends, and so, you know, kind of thinking that this betrothal, yes, is a political alliance, but is also coming from, you know, these two men who genuinely had affection for, you know, for mm-hmm. each other, and yeah.
But
so anyway,
it is that, but it's definitely not like love of two people. You know, she, as you can see, like, from the beginning, she, at the moment that she got betrothed to him, she was like, she already loved him. You know, mm-hmm. it's because of those fairy tales that she has in her head. You
mm-hmm.
know.
Yep.
But at the end of the chapter,
she's written four letters: one
yeah.
to her mother, her brother, Lady Lysa Arryn, and her grandfather in River Run. By the
mm-hmm.
time she had done, her fingers were cramped and stiff and stained with ink. I know that feeling of writing so much that your
mm-hmm.
hand cramps.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Jane is gone by the time, you know, she took down one of her favorite books and lost herself in the stories of Floring and Jonquil. Oh my god, I'm gonna, if I hear those names one more time, of Lady Shella and the Rainbow Knight, of valiant Prince Aemon and his doomed love for his brother's queen. It was not until later that night, as she was drifting off to sleep, that Sansa realized she had forgotten to ask about her sister.
She's just an awful sister. I would not want to have a sister like that. I'm glad to be an only child.
Yeah, it's, and again, I blame Catelyn for,
of course,
fostering the divide and seeing Arya as, like, a problem child.
Yeah, of course. You know, because the rest of her children look like Catelyn, Arya looked like Jon, who looked like who looked like typically like a Stark. So maybe she, you know, not really thinking about it, but the unconscious bias that she has towards John kind of rubbed off on Arya, because she should have been like taking in both of them, like, you are sisters, and trying to, I guess, more try to build that bond between the two of them, but instead was kind of like, I guess, encouraging what Septa Mordane was doing, that like Arya is not very good at these things, but Sansa is, and you know.
Yep.
But anyway.
And now we get John. Pretty long chapter.
Yes.
Begins, so basically they found a party of dead rangers that were part of Benjen Stark's like ranger party.
Yeah, well, there were only two. There were like supposed to be six that went off with Benjen, and there was only two that they found. It was Otho
and Jaffer Flowers.
Yes. Yeah. So they found them there dead. The hand was Otho's hand, was it?
Yeah, that ghost just like kind of ripped off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or gnawed off, shall we say. And I don't know, I kind of honed in. I don't know why, you know, I don't know. You know, just the notion of maybe, well, obviously White Walkers and, you know, cold and stuff. But, you know, why all the White Walkers' eyes have to be blue? Like, what was the choice there? And, like, when I think of the blue, I think of specifically, you know, the chakras. Because I've been working a lot with chakras. And the color that is, like, light blue is the, represents the throat chakra. So, but, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, just because they even point out, like, these guys never had blue eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. It's an interesting,
you know, because the tradition is, you know, if you're evil, like you have red eyes or like, you know, or black eyes. But, you know, blue is typically a very calming, soothing color. And
well, I guess it's ice, you know?
Yeah, like
it's that ice. Coolness.
Yeah, it's just the interesting dynamic of, you know, both water/ice and fire have healing and, you know, destructive properties, although fire is the one that, you know, is deemed technically like more evil and more destructive. And, you know, again, from what I've told you of last night, where we had to throw out this torch because it caught on fire and then had to call the fire department, and that shit was not fun. So yeah, fire can be, but also showing, you know, the ice being and water being like the like evil element, like in the same way that water is the element that goes with Slytherin and Harry Potter.
Yeah, yeah, that is true.
Anyway, so
I am Googling to see if there is a significance of the blue eyes White Walkers. Hang on.
And then, and who is it, Sir Jeremy, you know, and Mormont are arguing. It's like, do you really think he died before sounding his horn? And the guy's just like, you don't give me enough men, man. I don't, I can't do shit with what I have.
Yeah, exactly. What I wrote here on my notes is like, maybe they weren't killed there. Maybe they were taken there, or they walked there and, you know, pretended to be dead. And which is, you know, it is the case that they come to. That's the realization that they come to.
And but then ultimately, as intimidated as Sam is pulling out the old forensics.
Yeah, Sam knows a lot about
about
dead like, people, bad dead and, things.
Like, yeah, like just how the human body works, and he's just telling them they cannot have been dead for just a day, because their blood would still be flowing, like, you know, it's clotted, like literally when ghosts gnawed off the hand, it's like, you know, gummy worms.
Well, he says here that the blood, so he says here, a fresh kill, the blood will still flow. Later it would be clotted like a jelly, thick, and this man, it's all crusty and dry, like, so he wasn't like killed that day, and he wasn't killed the day before, because he would have been clotted. It is literally like, yeah, crusty.
Yeah,
and
like worms.
Yes, it's like the blood was black dust. That's what it says here. So it's been dead for a while.
Yeah, so that's, so it's the paradox of, like, from the inside of the body, as we can see, it shows all the signs of being dead for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. And yet the body on the outside is perfectly preserved. It's not rotting. There's no maggots. And I don't know if it mentions it or not, like, you know, it's not cold enough for,
yeah,
for a body to be preserved to that degree like that.
Yeah, because the wall is, like, sweating.
Mm-hmm.
So what they come to the conclusion is the fact that, you know, all the animals are, there's something wrong with this body, and all the animals are scared of it. They, like, mm-hmm. you know, try to bring the dogs near, and the dogs are just, like, absolutely no way.
Yep,
you know?
Yep, the dogs were hopeless. They, you know, they tried to, you know, throw the corpse up on a horse, and none of the horses will carry it, so they have to make this makeshift, you know, sled of branches to carry it back.
Yeah, yeah. You know, when Mormont is like, you know, what else? Oh, yeah, and, yeah, so it's, no, never mind. You know, so someone says, what else could it be? You know, because they saw what the wounds, and, like, someone has stuck an axe.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, it could have been the wildlings, because the wildlings do carry axes as well. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what else could it be? And they all, like, no one wanted to really say it, did they?
Yeah, what else?
But they all thought what
they're
it
all
was.
Thinking the same thing. And I liked this part with Mormont being like, you know, Tarly, like, you're fat, but you're not stupid. You did well today.
Yeah, that's when they were going back, back towards the wall. You know, and then, you know, one of the rangers, they were saying, you know, burn the corpses, and everyone's like, yeah, and Mormont's like, no, let's bring them back, because I want Maester Aemon to have a look at them. Well, basically not have a look at them, but
an autopsy of sorts.
Yeah, yeah, but not have a look at them, but analyze them. Yep. However else you can.
Yeah, like, I will
so
have
going
the
back.
Wood. Yeah, and Mormont's like, I'll have these woods searched, every tree, every rock, every bush, and every foot under muddy ground within 10 leagues of here. Use all men you have. Use the borrow hunters and foresters from the stewards if you must. If Ben mm-hmm. and the others are out here dead or alive, I will have them found.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's anyone else in these woods, I would know of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, they head back to the wall, and, you know, it's John. You know, John is explaining to Pip and the others what has happened, and then he realized,
well, when he walks in, when he comes in from the forest, he's just, everyone's just staring at him in pity, and then someone comes up to Lord Mormont and says, you know, there has come a raven, is urgent, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then they, like, he's staring at John, curiously.
Yeah, everyone's staring at John, and Alistair Thorne has a shitty smile on his face.
Yeah, because he's a prick.
Because he's a prick and takes pleasure in John's misery.
Mm-hmm.
So Mormont calls John up and is like, have a drink and sit down.
You know it's gonna be rough when like your boss is telling you, you know, have a drink and sit down.
Yeah. Yeah. The only thing is, like, am I being fired or who died?
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's either one of the two.
Yeah. And he finally, you know, King Robert is dead, and Lord Eddard has been imprisoned. He is charged with treason. It is said he plotted with Robert's brothers to deny the throne to Prince Joffrey. No, mm-hmm. said John at once, that couldn't be. My father would never betray a king. Be that as it may, it's not for me to say, no, for you.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and he says here, you know, you shouldn't do anything stupid, because it's nothing that happens in Westeros is, in King's Landing or anywhere else, it's not your business anymore, and it's none of our business anymore. You know, but it's saying here, Lord Mormont says that he will write to Grandmaster Pycelle, because he knows a few people on the council, so he knows Pycelle and Stannis, even though Stannis is not there, and Sir Barrister, and he's going to ask them to send
Ned Stark to the
wall. To send Ned to the wall, yeah. And John says, will the king listen to you? And he says, I imagine he'll listen to his mother. They give them too much credit. It's a pity that the dwarf isn't with them. Because, like, he would be able to, you know, he'll be able to slap Joffrey
like,
a bit.
Mormont is one of the few people to tell, you know, basically said, like, Catelyn taking the dwarf was a terrible idea.
Yeah, he says, your lady mother. And he's like, she's not my mother. And she's in, and Jon says here, like, Tyrion Lannister has been a friend to him. If Lord Eddard was killed, she would be as much to blame as the queen.
Yeah.
Because I think he realizes that, you know, this wouldn't have taken place if she hadn't taken Tyrion.
Yeah, this whole, you know, the... Yeah.
Obviously, he doesn't know, does he?
No,
he
but know. He doesn't know the details. But at this point, even in Westeros, like, the in the tabloids, whatever the equivalent of the tabloids is that the Lannister-Stark feud is now, like, old news.
Yes, of course, because it's easy to make that connection that, like, you know, Catelyn takes Tyrion and then suddenly Ned is imprisoned by the Lannisters.
Especially in the context of
not Robert suddenly, but in a few months, yeah.
Yeah, and the context of Robert is dead and now it's just Lannisters, not Baratheons.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he's putting the blame on her, which 100% it is her fault.
Yes. And... your duty is here now. Your old life ended when you took the black. His bird made a rock just echo, black. Whatever they do in King's Landing is none of our concern. You're free to go. I have no further need of you today. On the morrow, you can help me write that letter.
Mm-hmm.
And so the you know, he heads off to dinner. And what? And of course, Alistair Thorne, he's got to like open his mouth. What is he said? Not only a bastard, but a traitor's bastard. And Jon just loses his shit and just kicks like he's about to stab.
Yeah, he grabs a dagger and just like jumps him. That's what I wish that Harry would do to Snape.
Like take one of the dicing knives and just go at Snape.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. I guess it wouldn't be very PG, would it?
No, but and so all of his friends, you know, tackle him down, and he gets sent into timeout and in his quarters.
Yeah, yeah. And he's just sitting there because the high officers need to decide what is to be done with him, because I guess you don't attack one of your brothers.
Yeah,
I guess
that's one of the roles. A higher ranking one, so.
Yeah, yeah. So he's just sitting there. He drifts off to sleep, then wakes up with ghosts just whining and scratching at the door.
And I forgot that he finds, like, the guard that had been posted at his door. Mm-hmm. Like, his head, like, staring up, but he's on his belly, so his head has been totally twisted like an owl.
Yeah, yeah. Creepy, so creepy. It's just
so creepy, and we got this. And then we've got this thing going up towards Lord Mormont's chambers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so he gets. Where is it? Where does he get to? Like, sort of the living room bit,
like the solar, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the curtains are all drawn up, so it's really dark, but. He sees like a shadow in the shadows, that's how he describes it, sliding towards the inner door that led to Mormon's sleeping cell. Mm-hmm. A man's shape in all black, cloaked and hooded, but beneath the hood, its eyes shone with icy blue radiance. So Ghost went and leapt at him, and they have been like fighting.
And the thing shoves his fingers down Jon's mouth.
So like he tries to like choke Cut Ghost.
It doesn't work.
Yeah. The thing tries to choke Ghost, then Jon went and like slashed the hand, the dead man's hand, and Ghost breaks free, but then like the hand is like trying to grab at Jon's like ankle.
Yeah, it's like a
snake. The severed hand. Yeah, yep. Gross. And then you know the corpse lurched forward. And tries to jam his fingers inside Jon's mouth.
And then the raven finally screams, burn, burn, burn.
Well, in a bit.
Yeah.
Ghost grabs onto to the thing and basically gets him off John. And then Mormont comes out of his sleeping quarters with an oil lamp in hand.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when, he has a lamp on him.
Mm-hmm.
John grabs the lamp, throws it in the, what's it called? On the curtains.
Yeah.
And then throws the curtain, like, bare hands, just, like, grab at it, the burning curtain, and throw it at the...
Oh, my God. Again, with my fire incident last night. Oh, my God. I'm so grateful that the canister did not, light the curtains on fire when my husband threw it out.
Yeah. I think I read somewhere that, like, the curtains is so flammable that it just, everything goes up really quickly after that.
There's always a few instances of Christmas trees because, actually, my husband and I, we chopped up our Christmas tree and we're using it, to burn it. Mm-hmm. Like, those like, firs with all those pines, like, it just,
wow,
it goes up in an instant. So if a whole Christmas tree catches fire, that's awful.
Yeah, that's disturbing. That's really scary. Because they can get hot as well with the lights, right? And that can catch fire.
Yeah. I assume they have protections, but I don't know how the trees catch fire, but there's always a few, and the nature of those specific, that breed of tree that they sell for Christmas, it just so flammable.
Ugh. So yeah, that's how we end the chapter, isn't it? With
let it burn, he prayed as the cloth smothered the corpse. God, please, please let it burn.
Yeah.
Which, burning, just the White Walkers as a variant of the zombie, mm-hmm. Myth. It is calling upon the use of fire as mm-hmm. the way to destroy them. That's not wholly unheard of. But they are slightly different in the sense of zombies is that, it's less disease-like, where it's not like John or anyone has to fear of them biting them. It's just when they die and then the Night King's magic like reanimates them, but it's not like a viral thing in the way that other zombies are portrayed in other franchises.
Yeah, it's all about magic.
It's all like magic heavy, and because mm-hmm. and I think just in our world, when we're trying to make zombies somewhat plausible in our worlds, like in other novels, it makes more sense for them to be a more viral disease-esque, sort of like format to make it even somewhat plausible.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so I found why the White Walkers might have blue eyes.
Why?
So it says here that they also actually serve a practical purpose apart from, scaring the shit out of people.
Oh.
And it's like real world science suggests that blue eyes, common in wintry climates, give the creatures that bear them a serious advantage during the long night. Might explain why a lot of British people have blue eyes.
or why my Danish father and very Aryan blonde hair, blue eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it says here 2016 research on ancient DNA samples published in Nature showed that blue eyes were prevalent amongst Neanderthals in Europe thousands of years ago, suggesting that there is a good evolutionary reason that the trait persisted. One explanation comes by the way of a blue-eyed animal that thrives in the cold and the dark. Reindeer, researchers found, have eyes that turn from golden brown in the warmer months to deep blue in the winter in order to keep them see in the 24-hour darkness.
Interesting. Well, and again, it makes sense why the Vikings and Northern Europeans have more blue eyes in colder mm-hmm. climates.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Interesting. I knew is that blue eyes were like a recessive gene and was the least common, but I didn't know they served a actual like environmental purpose in the cold.
Yeah. It's cool, isn't it?
Yay! Extra history science lesson.
Mm-hmm. That is really cool. I actually like that.
Yeah. Then I would suck because, again, I'm the only member of my family with, like, dark brown eyes. Like, everyone else is Aryan.
Yeah, staying in the dark is just very bad for us. That's why I guess, like, because when I drive, I wear glasses when I'm driving. But I get, like, bursts of light, when you see the light and it's again, like, yeah, it's burst. It's not like the actual light. It's just bursts of light. So it's quite scary for me to drive at night.
Yeah, the lights get a little blurry at night for me too. So yeah. Anyway,
you see, it might be us. It might be us and our brown eyes.
Indeed. And then we've got Bran. Which, you know, we can, from Bran's exposition of the Karstarks coming, the Umbers, like all the Bannermen, you know, even before Rob even opens his mouth, you know, we realize so clearly Rob did not listen to Sansa's letter.
No, he did not. It's funny here. So, right in the beginning of this chapter, you know, because Bran's like, I want to go out there. And, you know, Rob's like, I don't have enough men to protect you. And Bran says, I'll take Summer. And Rob says, don't act the boy with me, Bran. You know better than that. Only 2 days ago, one of Lord Bolton's men knifed one of Lord Serwyn's at the Smoking Log. And I was thinking, those are not even warring houses. They're like both northern houses. They're allies.
In a drunk fight.
And it's kind of like, you know, that, I feel like that is a bit of a, what's the name? I keep forgetting this exact word every time. Something's going to happen in the future.
Predetermined or no? Or foreshadow?
Foreshadowing. I feel like that's a foreshadowing. Oh, that is kind of like they don't hesitate, even though it is drunken, but they are allies.
Yeah, and it's also, I think it's good to show, you know, even though there's lots of gray area in Game of Thrones, like there is a lot of, especially because so many POVs are in the Stark perspective, that we just want to do the good evil dichotomy of North honorable and good, South deceptive and bad, and just, you know, seeing that, you know, not all of them are as noble as the great illustrious Ned Stark.
No. Mm-mm. No.
Yep. So, like 12,000 men, or near enough, as makes no matter how many knights, few enough to be a knight, you must blah blah blah. Basically,
yeah,
Luwin is like, Bran is like, how many knights? And he's like, 300, perhaps 4.
Yeah, and so we find out that in the north they don't have many knights as the south, because, you know, to be a knight you need to stand your vigil in a sept and be anointed with the 7 oils to consecrate your vows. But in the north, they keep more to the old gods, and they don't have a sept, and they don't have those customs. So they are, not a lot of them are knights. There's like about 300 of them out of 12,000 men who are knights that have come to, well, I guess in the Karstarks, or just like overall? Oh yeah, no, yeah. Because Bran asked him, how many is it now with the Karstarks coming? So they have 12,000 men there in Winterfell, just like coming over to start some shit,
and Mr. Lewin's like, Bran, your lord brother will not have time to see you. And he's like, I won't bother Rob, I just want to visit the Godswood. And
because that's where he's now feeling more comfortable. You know, he says here that off late, he says he had always liked the Godswood, but off late he found himself drawn to it more and more. He felt safe in the heart tree's eyes. Their sight.
Yes, and you know, it explains how they've kind of, when, you know, like inside Winterfell, when Dancer can't, like, he can't ride a horse, his little pony, Hodor, they've created this sort of basket for him, and Maester Luwin's just like, men will look at you, and they will look at you, and they will talk, and some will mock you.
And it's actually like, you can see how much like Bran has accepted that this is his life now, because it says here, let them mock. No one mocked him in his No one mocked him in his bedchamber, but he would not live his life in bed.
Yeah.
So he's just like, you know, it's no life being staying in bed. So
yeah, like he, you know, it still bothers him, but he's at a point that, you know, it's better to still do stuff, even if you are, you know, incapacitated in certain regards.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So Hodor takes him off to the Godswood, sets him down, and Hodor, like, goes into, like, the waters. And
yeah, the hot springs. And we find out that, you know, Rob is actually going to be leaving to war. So that's fun.
And, you know, Rob is just like, Sansa doesn't say shit about Arya.
Yeah, yeah. So when he receives the letter, he's like, what is wrong with that girl? You know, she hasn't said anything about Arya. And so Rickon has gone wild now.
Rickon's gone insane. Like, he went crazy and was finally...
When he found out that Rob was going to leave.
And that their father is arrested. And Rob had to send half the castle looking for him. Ended up in the crypts. And Shaggy Dog is completely out of control. And had to, and, you know, took a chunk out of someone's leg. And only Grey Wind and Rob were able to subdue him. And now Shaggy Dog is in the kennels, locked up, and Rickon's just crying even more because he's separated from Shaggy Dog.
Yeah, yeah.
Who let a 4-year-old have a dire wolf?
Well, yeah, because it seems like the dire wolves are sort of
extensions.
Yeah, extensions of their.
Yeah, so Shaggy Dog has all the impulse control and temper of a 4-year-old.
Yeah, yeah, which, okay. You know, so we find here that, you know, so people are saying, even Maester Luwin is saying, you don't have to go. You can send all the people to Riverrun to help out. And he's like, no, I have to go. My Lord Father would never have sent men off to die while he hurtled in a craven behind the walls of Intervale. And so we see here that Rob has become more of the Lord, like Rob the Lord now.
Yeah, and
that he was before, and the houses keep on trying him. They keep
testing him, and it's just interesting. Like, do you personally think that Rob's conviction in going is sort of rooted on what he thinks is the noble side, or more of a little bit arrogant, egotistical side? Because whichever way you look about it, he is how do you say it, Cabeçadura?
What?
Cabeça
dura. Yeah, hard-headed. Yeah, in Portuguese is cabeça dura. Yeah, no, I think that is what he thinks he's supposed to be. Because it says here, you know, when he's having a confrontation with Greyjoy Umber, and he's like, you know, I won't let a green boy like you tell me what to do, takes out his sword, then, you know, Grey Wind goes and bites two of his fingers off. And then like, Greyjoy Umber's like, ha ha ha, this is so funny.
And now but is then, one of Robb Stark's supporters now.
Yeah, yeah. So then afterwards, that night, he goes to Bran in, you know, Bran's bedroom, and he's like, I was shit scared. I thought he was going to kill me.
Yeah, like, I was about to shit myself, which is just an interesting thing, because we... You know, unless we're given certain people's perspectives, we think of how, you know, their expressions are and how they look. That must be genuinely how they feel, but it's, you know, often it's not.
No, he is very much like, he's putting on a mask. He says that Roose Bolton's, he never says a word, he just stares at him, and that's, like, really creepy. And he's like, all I can think of is that room that they have in the Dreadfort where the Boltons hang skins of their enemies. And then Bran says, that's just one of old man's stories, is it not? And then it makes you think he's still like a kid, you know? He's believing the stories, even though, yes, okay, it is true. But they don't know this. And like, old man's just been like to tell creepy stories as far as they know. None of these things exist. But he's still believing those things. So he's still just a kid, you know, at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, going back to, you know, when they got the letter... from Sansa, because this is all triggering because Ned has been arrested, and then he receives the letter from Arya
or Sansa,
and then he says and she says nothing of Arya, nothing, so not so much as a word. Damn her, what's wrong with the girl? And then Bran says here, she lost her wolf. And I think, right, that is like has a double meaning, you know, not to Bran, but to us. It's kind of like she lost her wolf, not like the physical dire wolf that she had, Lady, but her like starkness.
Her starkness.
She lost this. Yeah, she lost that, you know, as soon as she went south, she lost that.
Yeah, it's, again, as much as I want to defend Sansa, the fact that they were willing to kill Lady. The fact, well, even just wanting to kill Mynuria, and then even okay with killing Lady as a substitute.
Yeah.
So Bran is in the wood, you know, pondering all of this. And who should come out to the Godswood but Osha? And I thought, I didn't remember this, it's just really sad, you know, that the only way that Osha can, like, come out to the Godswood is to basically bargain, like, and let whoever's, like, responsible for her, like, you know, sleep with her.
Yeah, it's really sad. She says it, at least it's better than the other guy. Steve, his name was?
Yeah.
Yeah. God, that's awful.
Yep, and then they, you know, Bran's like, tell me what you mean about hearing the old gods. You ask them and they're answering, open your ears, listen, and you'll hear. It's only the wind. Who do you think sends the wind, if not the gods? She seated herself across the pool, clinking faintly as she moved. They see you, boy. They hear you talking. That's rustling. That's them talking back. What are they saying? They're sad. Your lord brother will get no help from them, not where he's going. The old gods have no power. In the south, the werewoods there were all cut down thousands of years ago. How can they watch your brother when they have no eyes?
That's really scary. Again,
Natalie Tenna in this role, in this scene, was awesome.
I know. She's so good at it. She's so good. You know, because Hodor comes over and he's completely naked.
Yep.
And then she's naked. Like, that. It's like, now there's a big man. And she said, there's giant blood in him. And she's explaining to him, like, that, you know, beyond the wall, there's still giants. And that sometimes, like, giants mate with humans. And then there's a bit here that says that the women take human men for lovers, and it's from them the half-bloods come from. And it just, like, reminds me of Hagrid.
Well, yeah, well, especially because she says that it has to be women taking women lovers, because, like, men would, like, rip a woman apart if they tried. Like, a male giant would rip someone apart, so.
Yeah, they would.
Yeah, so, yeah, there's no, so it's, yeah, so now every, now in the Goblet of Fire chapter where Hagrid's like, to Madame Maxime, is it your mother or your father? And it's like, no, what other option not, could it be?
Yeah, it's not the mother.
Yep, so, see, there are giants and worse than giants, Lordling. I tried to tell your brother when he asked his questions, and your maester and that smiley boy Greyjoy, the cold winds are rising and men go out from their fires and never come back. Or if they do, they're not men anymore, but only whites with blue eyes and cold black hands. Why do you think I run south with Stiv and Holly and the rest of them fools? Mance thinks he'll fight the brave, sweet, stubborn man like the White Walkers were no more than rangers. But what does he know? Yeah, it's kind of interesting, this notion of, again, in this context of Westeros, and again, in the grand scheme of, like, fantasy fiction, Game of Thrones is, and Song of Ice and Fire is rather low in magic compared to some others, especially in this context of maybe it did once exist, but it's been, like, dead, like, a long, long, long time. And so the idea of it possibly coming back is considered ridiculous. So where was I going with this? I don't know. I was sort of thinking about it again in the deniers of the pandemic.
But it's not like the pandemic is that, well, I don't know. I think that's what makes it enjoyable. I think that's like the trajectory that we take with growing up, because because all the fantasy books are made for a younger audience and this is not. So with us, to capture an older audience, they do have to, like, tone down a bit more the magic.
Yeah, and to make it
and amp up, the you know, the complexities of humanity and politics and you know. And I think that's what makes it, like, a really great book, really great series.
Yeah, and I don't know, I was just thinking with coronavirus, because I think with a lot of people, you know, and not wanting to accept the severity of corona, I think a lot of people didn't want to think that, like, something like the Black Plague of the Middle Ages could come back and, like, wipe us out.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, it's here. But, yeah, they think that, I guess, because of technology that has evolved, it is not
Well, what good is
not
that?
Real.
People don't believe in science or technology anymore, but, yeah.
Yeah, no.
But anyway, but yeah, although White Walkers tend to be less metaphors for disease, and there's a lot of stuff that's been written about them being the metaphor for, you know, global warming and climate change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
With anyway, the long summer Asha's... and stuff. Winter even, sorry.
Yeah, so Asha's basically giving Bran the tea of, there's all this scary shit going on up north, and your brother's a moron for going south.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she says, you know, the fight is up north, he won't listen to me. And Bran's like, tell me, and I will, and he will listen to me. So she mm-hmm. tells him, you know, he needs to go north, not south. There's like crazier shit going on up there.
Mm-hmm. And so he returns from the Godswood back to the hall, and Rob's got a private meeting with Lord Carstock and some of the higher ranking bannermen. So Bran has to play the Lord, you know, hosting mm-hmm. everyone. I welcome you to our fires and offer you meat and mead in honor of our friendship. And, you know, all of them are, so he can hear them whispering, sooner die than live like that, you mm-hmm. know. And then it's, what else did they say? They also say, you know.
Said that the boy was broken inside as well out. Too craven to take his own life.
So that's, yeah, that's a really shitty thing that not only.
He's a kid.
Like, not only do they think life's not worth living because of his disability, because this is a shitty ableist society, but also yeah. that he must mentally be damaged too, because if he were a sane person, he would do the quote-unquote honorable manly thing of, like, die rather than dishonor mm. himself by living such an incapacitated life.
Yeah, yeah, that's awful. It's just dreadful.
Boo. And there are some who call my order the Knights of the Mind, said Lewin, in response to Bran, who's like, I want to be a knight. You are a surpassing clever boy when you work at it, Bran. Have you ever thought you might wear a maester's chain? There's no limit to what you might learn. I want to learn mm-hmm. magic, Bran told him. The crow promised mm-hmm. me that I would fly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately, Maester Lewin is like, I can teach you all of these things, but I can't teach you. No man can teach you magic.
Yep.
And he's like, the children could, the children of the forest, and, you know.
Yep. And so, yeah, Bran should not have, again, he should have just talked to Rob directly, not that Rob would have listened, but yeah, just, mm-hmm. you know, the maester is just like, that wildling woman could give old Nan lessons in telling tales, I think, mm-hmm. he said when Bran was done. Yeah. I will talk with her again if you like, but it would be best you did not trouble your brother with this folly.
Yeah.
Which... You know, I think, you know, this pandemic has shown me that you know, luckily we were able to work, quote unquote, fast enough at the great cost of much human life, but we were able to get a vaccine in a year, mm-hmm. but still, you know, having problems with coronavirus. Like, I am, you know, all this, you know, especially in the future seasons when Game of Thrones surpasses the books, it's all about, like, it doesn't matter all of our stupid petty fighting, like, we're all just gonna die. You know, this
yeah.
pandemic has shown me is we would rather die squabbling with each other than, mm-hmm. you know, like that. Like, they're all, so many books are about, you know, banding together against the common enemy, whether it's aliens or, again, White Walkers or, you know, a disease or whatever, or crazy, The Quiet Place, those crazy aliens come off the asteroid.
Mm, yeah.
But yeah, like, this whole pandemic has taught me that, no, we will die squabbling and bickering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At this stage in the book, it does remind me of, you know, the beginning of coronavirus when it was just, you know, in China and people were taking the piss. You know, they just didn't believe that it could come any further, or if it was even real. And people were just mm-hmm. like, oh, it's just a cold, whatever. And then, you know, by the time that it spread so badly throughout
the world.
Planet. Yeah, it reminds me of Cersei. You know, the Cersei, like, in the TV show,
mm-hmm.
when she's just like, let them kill themselves trying to kill the White Walkers, and I'll just sit here on my throne.
Yeah, and then Jaime's like, you realize someone wins, right? If the dead win, they march south and kill us all. If the living win and we betrayed them, they march south and kill us all.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. I love that line when he says yes. that. It's so good.
Yes, but yeah. But anyway, so yeah, a lot of, you know, things with the corona, like this big shadowy thing that we don't understand, or we think, you know, oh, it's, you know, it's not real, or it's not a big deal. It's like the giants aren't real. It's like, oh, yes, it's real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. And then what do we got?
Well, Rob's going off now.
Yep. He's saying, he's loaded up on Dancer and he's saying goodbye to Rob. You are the Stark mm-hmm. in Winterfell now. You know, you must take my place as I took Father's until we come home. I know, said Bran, replied miserably. Listen to Maester Luwin's counsel and take care of Rickon. Tell him I'll be back as soon as the fighting is done.
Mm-hmm.
And Rickon had refused to come down. He was up in his chamber, red-eyed and defiant. No, he screamed while Bran had asked if he didn't want to say farewell to Rob. No farewell. Poor baby.
It says, I told him, Bran said, he says no one ever comes back. The kid knows. Okay, yeah. Don't discount him.
Yeah, the kid knows. And, you know, from what I recall in the books, like, Rickon went off with Osha, and we haven't heard of them
since. Yeah, not yet.
And, yeah, but, you know, he got killed off in the stupidest way in the show. Just zigzags. But anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, yeah, he knows the deal, everything. And, you know, they watch him go away. He remembers Osha's words. Bran wanted to shout a warning, but, mm-hmm. you know, the huge stable boy had a lost and frightened look to his face. Hodor, he said sadly. Hodor, Bran agreed, wondering what it meant.
Yeah. And he, like, noticed that the only people that were left were women and children and old men. So they left, like, no one there in case anything happened. They left no one there. Yeah. They left no one there to protect them.
Yeah, not great. Which, again, I wonder about the scenario if Rob is just like, this is bullshit, but still I'm not gonna call the banners yet. I'm gonna go down to King's Landing and see what the deal is. Maybe get Sansa back briefly, and then I'll stir shit up.
Yeah, yeah. That would have been a better plan, I guess.
Alrighty then, and now we move on to our history lessons. What was yours?
So mine is more psychology lessons, not history. So it's the characteristics of manipulation. Ooh. I got this from Wikipedia because we can see a lot of the typical manipulation thing going on with Sansa that, you know, we've touched upon even earlier on in Sansa's chapter. And so the common means of manipulation can be categorized in three sections. So it's positive reinforcement, includes praise, superficial charm, superficial sympathy, excessive apologizing, facial expressions such as forced laugh or smile, and public recognition. So you can see those in Cersei by her, you know, calling her sweet girl, you know, saying that she's lovely, giving her, like, rewarding her when she's doing well, like, with smiles.
Yep, and, or as they would say in pop psychology, love bombing.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you have negative reinforcement, includes nagging, yelling, the silent treatment, intimidations, threats, swearing.
Fear of punishment.
Emotional blackmail. Yeah. Guilt trips, playing the victim. And those you could also see in that chapter, which was, some of them anyway, but, you know, with the intimidation and being like, you know, mm-hmm. if you don't do this, then it means that you have traitor blood. If you don't write to your family, it means that you do have traitor blood. And you don't get to
marry the king anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Not and that that have, would have been a huge loss, but, you know.
Yeah, and then you have intermittent or partial reinforcement. Partial or intermittent negative reinforcement can create an effective climate of fear or end doubt. Partial or intermittent positive reinforcement can encourage the victim to persist. So that's what they were doing. They were going back and forth, you know, creating doubt in her head that her dad did do something bad,
mm-hmm.
and just, you know, being like, if you don't help us, then you don't get to marry the king, as you said. So manipulators exploit the following vulnerabilities, which is naivety or immaturity, which sounds down to a T there.
Yeah.
You know, people who find it hard to accept the idea that some people are cunning, devious, and ruthless, or are in denial if they're being taken advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
Over-consciousness, people who are too willing to give another the benefit of the doubt and see their side of things. Low self-esteem, which I don't think Sansa has that, so no. Do you think she has that? I think she thinks way too much of herself. Well, you know, when she compares herself to Jane. You know,
I think she has, I don't know if it's necessarily low self-esteem, but she is the oldest daughter, and just naturally a lot of expectations were thrown on her. So, you know, trying to live up to being the lady that her mother is. So I think there's stuff going on there.
Mm. And then you have over-intellectualization, is that people who try to understand or believe that others have some understandable reason to be manipulative. So that's what, you know, she does. Sansa doesn't believe that Cersei has a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, she doesn't have a reason, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then there's emotional dependency and greed, which I don't think that Sansa has it. I mean, emotional dependency maybe a little bit, but it's because she's so deluded that she loves Joffrey that she would do anything for him.
Yeah.
And greed, yeah, she is kind of like, you know, she does get a bit twinkly eyed with the idea of the marrying the king. Yeah, marrying the king, being the queen, there's all this glamour. So there is that, you know, she is being very much manipulated into doing what the queen wants because of those things. You know, she is naive, she is overconscious, over intellectual. She has greed of becoming, you know, more than marrying some, like, hedge knight, as she tells Cersei. So, yeah, that's what I have. What do you have?
Mine was not that. It was actually real cases of, like, zombie-esque stuff in nature.
Ooh, do tell.
So I found this in Medical News Today. And one of these I did actually already know about. The number one example they have is the zombie ants.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, there is a type of fungi, and it has a genus of fungi that has more than 200 species called Ophiocordyceps. And, like, this fungi is such, it's toxic in the way that these species of fungus target and infect various insects through their spores. After infection takes place, the parasitic fungi takes control of the insect's minds, altering its behavior to make the propagation of fungal spores more likely. So basically, this fungus can possess possess an ant, and, like, even after, like, it's dead or, like, whatever, can make it walk up to, like, the highest part, you know, where the likelihood of, like, the fungus spreading will be greater. So
mm-hmm. Have you ever played The Last of Us?
No.
That's where they take the zombies from that. That's where they take the inspiration for, well, they take it from that fungus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I wish there was a gothic novel I read that actually ended up using a very scientific, like, this fungus stuff, but they made it so, like, mysterious, and I'm like, I wish they would have, like, gone into, like, some detail of, like, yeah, how does, like, fungi, this type of fungi work, but they didn't. That was one of my big criticisms of that book. I didn't mind the science fiction route for the gothic literature, but I just wish they would have described it more, because, yeah, there is this, you know, there is a biological, like, you know, precedent for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you would like The Last of Us.
The Last of Us. And then, so we've also got, those are the zombie ants. We've also got zombie spiders.
Ew.
Where there is a specific, a previously unknown species of wasp known as Zapota, who can manipulate spiders from the Anolosimus eximus species to an extent that researchers had never before witnessed in nature. So basically what the wasps will do is they lay eggs on the abdomen of this type of spider, and when the egg hatches, then the wasp larva emerges. It starts feeding on the spider and begins to take control of its body.
Oh my god.
When the larva has gained full control of its host, it turns it into a zombie-like creature that is compelled to stray away from its mates and spin cocoons. And that's just very interesting because this specific species of spider is almost always with a colony. But it's through this sort of possession with the wasp larvae that they break away from the colony and create their own cocoons, like, mm-hmm. away from the, you know, away from, you know, their species.
Mm, gross.
Yeah. So, yeah, those are the zombie spiders. And then the reanimated virus. So, basically, what is it? So, in 2014, an organism was found out of the Siberian permafrost, and it's mm-hmm. it's what you call like a giant virus. It's called a giant virus because it has up to it has as many as 500 genes.
Wow. Okay.
And it is, and it's 3,000 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea is that, you know, the size of giant viruses, as well as the fact that they contain such a large amount of DNA, can make them particularly dangerous, explains the researcher. Among known viruses, the giant viruses tend to be very tough, almost impossible to break open. Mm-hmm. Special environments such as the deep ocean sediments or the permafrost are very good preserves of microbes and viruses because they are cold, agnostic, and dark. Mm-hmm. The reanimated P.S. sibericum only infected amoebas, archaic unicellular organisms, but happily not humans and other animals. Yet Clarivian Abergel warned that there may be similar giant viruses buried inside the permafrost that could prove dangerous to humans.
Oh, God. Jesus.
So, yeah. So, just the fact that the sheer, like, complexity of this virus's, like, genetic makeup... Mm-hmm. You know, could make it for that they could maybe cause damage or take control of an organism more complex than an amoeba, like a human or an animal.
Yeah, that's terrifying, isn't it?
That is terrifying. And then what do we got here? Oh, the zombie plants. Yeah, so what do we got? So there's a bacteria which insects decimate, infect plants such as goldenrods, which have yellow flowers. The infection causes the goldenrods to put out leaf-like extensions instead of their usual blooms. These leaf-like growths attract more insects, which allows the bacteria to travel widely and infect other plants. While the transformation does not cause the plant to die, researchers are fascinated by how phytoplasma can bend their host's will to make it grow the elements that it require to spread rather than its, you know, usual blossoms.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God. That's crazy.
Yeah, nature is crazy.
Yeah, it is very, like, science fiction.
Yeah. And then the last thing it has, it's just human zombies, ? And so in 1997, there was a study paper in The Lancet in which they analyzed the cases of three individuals from Haiti whose communities had identified them as zombies. Mm-hmm. One was a 30-year-old woman who had allegedly quickly died after having fallen ill. Her family recognized her walking as a zombie 3 years after this event. Another was a young man who had died at 18 and reemerged after another 18 years at a cockfight.
Wow.
So the final case study concerned another woman who had died at 18 but was spotted again as a zombie 13 years after this event. Dr. Duyan and Professor Littlewood examined the three zombies and found that they had not been the victims of an evil spell. Instead, medical reasons could explain their zombification. The first zombie had catatonic schizophrenia, a rare condition that makes the person act as though they are walking in a stupor. The second person had experienced brain damage and also had epilepsy, while the third merely had a learning disability.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So the idea of, you know, to the uneducated eye, a lot of people with certain, you know, mental illnesses or difficulties or brain damage can come off as, like, the typical, zombie-esque, you know, super.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. That's my history lesson of, and that's where, as you said, in, like, the franchise you mentioned, like, a lot of zombie novels, like, if they're taking place in any world similar to our own, they have to explain the zombies in this sort of, like, mm-hmm. you know, evolutionary biological way to make it seem somewhat plausible. Like, the only zombie movie I like is, because I don't like the banality of zombies and they're gross. Mm-hmm. Like, I like my suave, sexy vampires. Like, The only zombie movie that I do like at all is a World War Z.
Okay, yeah.
With Brad Pitt.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah, and for them, like, it was basically a sort of rabies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Have you seen Train to Busan?
No.
It's a Korean film. And it's so set in train, of course. But it's really good. It's really, really good. It's it's about zombies, but I think you will like them. I think you will like those zombies as well, because it is sort of like, yeah, virus has taken over. And it just happens so quick. It's like a really good film. And have you seen Squid Game?
Heard of it, have not seen it yet. Basically, okay. the Hunger Games.
Yeah, the guy in it, like, he's just in it for the beginning. He is in Train to Busan. He's very good looking as well.
Yeah. If I think of, you know, if I do a post-apocalyptic story, like, I have in my mind a story of a werewolf virus.
Oh, that would be cool. I like
that. Werewolf virus, and there are certain strings of the variant. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't call them Greek letters, but there's a certain variant where you transform at the full moon. There's a variant that's even worse, where you transform into a werewolf every night. And then there's the worst strand, where you're just always a werewolf.
Oh, God. Poor little Pin. Imagine if it was just every night. That poor man.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, poor Lupin. Anyway, but yeah, I digress. So, and now we move on to friendship lessons. What was your friendship lesson?
So my friendship lesson, this one's just like really simple, because it does come from Sam and Pip and Gren. You know, they all rallied around, I was gonna say Rob, they all rallied around John when they heard the news, and they were just like, well, it's not true. Even like Pip said, even Gren knows that it's not true, and we are all here for you. And you know, Sam was so sweet and said, you know, you are our brother and he is all of our dads. And he's like, if you want to go to the God's Wood to pray, I'll go with you. So my friendship lesson is surround yourself with people who will always support you.
Yes, it's very sweet, because it's not just like, oh, you're in my thoughts and prayers or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like Sam is asking, like, I will go and pray with you.
Yeah, yeah, they are. You know, they are more than just friends, you know, and that's really lovely. That's my friendship lesson. Sweet. What's your friendship lesson?
My lesson comes from the Night's Watch, but it comes from Mormont.
Okay.
It comes from Mormont in his praise of Sam. And, you know, it's not patronizing or anything. You know, Mormont is accepting, you know, Sam's weaknesses, but it's just like, you did very well, and that was important information for us to have in terms of trying to figure this out. So be like Mormont in, again, acknowledging, you know, whether you personally like them or not. I'm sure, you know, there are many instances in the future where Mormont will be exasperated by Sam's cowardice and, you know, how flighty and skittish he is, but he does know Sam's worth and acknowledges it when he's useful. So
yes. Yeah.
So be like Mormont. Which is a mark of a good leader. Like, throw your subordinates and your friends a bone that they can, you know, so they feel appreciated.
Yeah, that's nice. I like it.
Yeah. Alrighty then, and thus concludes this episode of Podcaster's Landing. Tune in next time, where we will be covering Daenerys, Catelyn, and Tyrion.
I was wondering where Catelyn was. So I was just thinking, it's been a while since I've heard from her.
It's been 4 weeks, over 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alrighty then. So, catch you guys later.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Podcaster's Landing. The music to our intro is copyrighted by Persian-German composer Ramin Djawadi. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophia Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media, Sophia Mare Studios on Instagram,
Sophia Mare Studios on TikTok and SophiaMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophia Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophiaMare Studios. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks. That was the Sophia Mare Studios podcast.